Topic number three going to you, Peter. Two of the guys we have mentioned throughout this show, Camilo Villegas, as you mentioned, won two in a row in the FedEx Cup to sort of stamp his inclusion into at least, you know, guys that are going to be coming up and playing. And we've always seen the talent and wondered, you know, when he was going to, you know, finally break through and win. Well, he won two in a row against some pretty good fields at the end of the year. And Anthony Kim, also a two-time winner, won at Wachovia and won at Tiger's other tournament, the AT&T, in July. Played great in a Ryder Cup and is winning this tournament right now, the Chevron, the Tiger hosts. Which of those two guys do you think? I'm not going to say are going to, you know, a lot of these guys are like, who's going to be the next guy to compete against Tiger? I don't think anybody is. Until Tiger hits probably 38, when age is going to catch up with him, nobody's going to compete against him. But in the interim, like we've talked about, I think every decade comes a player that's like a 5 to 7 major winner player, like a Tom Watson. Somebody comes along like in the 70s or in the 80s that you know, is going to win 5 to 7, a Nick Faldo type player. Which of those two guys do you think is the more likely to be the 5-7 major winner?
You know, when you look at the two, the first thing I would have to consider is, where did they win? Now, Kim won at Congressional, and he won the Wachovia, which both are stellar fields. Now, Villegas won, and I think I'm correct here, the last two events of the FedEx Cup,
right,
which included the Tour Championship. So those are limited field events. Kim beat full field events and full field events that are well attended. And the Wachovia particularly has become one of the marquee events on tour. I think Anthony Kim probably has more game, all-around game, than Camilo Villegas. And Camilo is great to watch and his little Spider-Man routine, and he's good for the game. He actually brings women out to the field. I mean, if you go to the Honda and watch Camilo and follow him for a few holes, he's got some cast of females watching him walk around the golf course, or Miami especially. They're both really good for the game, and I really should be pulling for Camilo because he's a Gator, and we all know about the Gators.
Don't you do it, Colin.
Come on, Colin. Give me one.
He's not allowed to with Russ not here.
Yeah.
Thank you, Colin, for being brief. I appreciate that.
Let's watch today. It's a good reason to watch.
You're right.
Well, was the Target World Challenge. What is it now?
The Chevron.
Chevron World Challenge. Let's watch. It should be a good final round. They'll be playing together, right? Aren't they?
I think they got – I don't know how they pair these, if they're by threes or by twos. If it's by threes, yeah, Camilo's got a shot at being in it. He's tied with Vijay and Steve Stricker at 6-under. But I don't know how they – if they go by finish or however they do that when they're matching them up. But
Villegas finished before Vijay on the course, so technically they're both one shot back, right?
Yeah, no, they're two. They're Vijay, Steve Stricker, and Camilo are two back of Anthony.
Okay,
Kim.
So it's going to be Kim and Furyk,
right?
And then in the group in front of them will be Vijay and Camilo,
right? So Camilo will be able to see what's going on right in front of them. But I agree with you again, Peter. I think Kim has the most game. I think we've seen that. He's got the scent, the presence about him on the big stage, again, going back to the Ryder Cup and just whipping Sergio Garcia, the number two ranked player in the world, that last day in singles. And I think he's got the, for lack of a better term, that Tiger-esque presence about him, like he's able to kind of gather in the moment and do something spectacular. With that said, though, he's got some maturity issues that Tiger never seemed to have. Tiger seemed like he came on this tour and he was like 40 years old at age 17. Like he was ready to deal with the media and knew how to keep his nose clean. And like we've talked about, any distractions that he had, whether it be caddy or agent or swing coach, he'd get rid of them. It wasn't a thought of, you know, okay, let's try and work this through. No, Tiger seemed to have a plan, and he worked that plan right from the beginning. Kim's more like a normal person. He, you know, goes horseback riding, or he just injured himself. I think horseback riding, fell off a horse and hurt his ankle or something bizarre. You can't have any of that. You're a golfer now. I'm not saying you can't have an outside life, but you can't go knee boarding like Ernie Els or skiing like or snowboarding like David Duval or whatever, and end up hurting yourself. The money in your career is with your hands, your legs, your back, everything. You've got to try and make sure that you do what you need to do to make sure those properties are taken care of, because that's how you're going to make your money. And I think Anthony still has a maturation process, and you know, he's a partier. He liked going out, and I think he's sort of, you know, realizing that doesn't mix. You can't be out till 2 a.m. and then try and hit a golf ball the next day with any kind of consistency. So you're seeing a maturation process in him, and hopefully he will continue that, and I think you'll really see the full development of his skills come out, and he's not going to go John Daly or anything. You'll see him consistently take steps towards not competing against Tiger, but at least being in that echelon where every once in a while he's going to win a tournament. Camille, on the other hand, I think has an unbelievable amount of talent, but I don't know if I get the presence feel from him yet. Now, just like you said, he won in two limited field events. Now, they were good fields. They were high-quality players, but at the same time, Tiger wasn't in either one of them. And you know, we've been waiting for this kid for a couple years now. You saw a glimpse of it at the Honda 2 years ago when he got into that playoff. And I kept telling Russ, I'm like, he needs to win. Like, we need to see him get a win, not just play great and do the Spider-Man and all that stuff. And now that he's finally broke through, is it going to be a David Duval situation where he's sort of been in the mix for a while and hasn't come on top? And then when he finally does, then the wins start coming a lot more rapidly. I don't know. I don't get the same sense from him yet of kind of that superstar quality, but it certainly is a potential in him. And just like you said, today you might get a little glimpse of it. But, man, going into next year, I really want to see how these two guys, especially with Tiger coming back, you know, even though it might take him till Augusta, but how these guys play early in the year is going to be very interesting, because I think they're both great candidates to be that 5-7 major winner.
The real telltale for me on the difference, though, is if you watch Anthony Kim swing and you watch Camilo Villegas swing, Anthony Kim's golf swing looks like it's made to perform under pressure and repeat. Now, Villegas has a very, what I would call a violent, high-speed, high-impact golf swing. And to me, I look at Anthony Kim, and it's much more controlled, much more disciplined, and I think he has the ability to repeat that swing over a longer period of time. I could see Villegas having some back problems, probably in the not too distant future, swinging the way he swings.
Good point, Peter, and I agree with you on that that point as well. All right, number four, going to you. Final topic here. I'm going to steal something from the Golf Channel I saw this morning. I don't think there's any copyright infringement issues here, but they had a story, what they called the best underdog story of the year, and they had four guys, but I'm not going to throw Davis Love in there. He's not an underdog. The guy's won, you know, 20 times on the tour. So I'm going to limit it to three guys and get your opinion on who you think the best underdog's been this year, the 2008 PGA Tour season. First, we got Paul Goidos, journeyman. You know, he won at Hawaii a few years ago, but that was kind of it. Comes to TPC at Sawgrass. Doesn't even have a logo. Doesn't have a sponsorship. He's wearing just a plain shirt and a Long Beach something, minor league baseball team hat. So he doesn't even have a sponsor. What does he do? He takes Sergio Garcia, now the number two player in the world, to extra holes, and he gets a little nervous, I think, on 17, as most people do, and ends up hitting a ball in the water and loses that. But that's number one. Paul Goidos almost winning the fifth major, the TPC. Rocco Media, of course, don't have to talk too much about this, taking Tiger Woods to 19 holes on an extra day of the U.S. Open before finally succumbing. Or Eric Compton, two-time heart transplant recipient, coming back after the second heart transplant, just 6 months, I believe, getting back on tour, making the cut at Disney, almost getting through Q School with his second heart. Which of those three do you think is the best underdog story?
Well, I'm going to do it by elimination. Paul Goidos, I think, we all know he's a journeyman, but I see that week as just an absolute fluke. Rocco, I think with Rocco, was it this year or the year before where he actually went to Arnie and asked for a sponsor's exemption only and if and only if Arnie thought he was playing well enough in the weeks leading up to it. Then he got to Bay Hill, and he made the cut, and he contended. I think it was this year as well.
You could be right.
That to me is the greatest comeback story. On Eric Compton, I'm all for I think it is the most emotional story. It's not really a comeback because he's never really succeeded on any level. Had some moderate success on the nationwide tour. But ultimately, my problem with the Eric Compton story is not Eric Compton. My problem is the U.S. Supreme Court. I take huge exception to the ruling that walking is not an integral part of the game of golf. If anybody has tried to walk 4 days in a row, I did it this summer in a golf tournament up in Long Island and a hilly courses. It was a 3-round event, and we walked 36 one day, and we walked 18 the next. I was walking uphill on the 18th hole of that last event, and the bottom of my feet hurt so bad. I wanted to crawl to the green. So I think walking is an integral part of the game. Eric Compton, too, some people don't know this. My memory is correct. I think he was at one point the youngest player to make a cut on the PGA Tour, and I think it was at the Honda Classic when it was at Heron Bay about 10 years ago, maybe a little more. He was in high school at the time. The heart transplant, unbelievable. He almost got his card at Q School. Great heartfelt story, just not the great comeback story. So I'm going to go with Rocco.
I'm going to agree with you. I think Goidos, like you say, just he got hot for that week. I mean, on that golf course, that's still an unbelievable story because that course is so tough, and there's so many traps there, like where you can make a triple without even blinking. So for him to maintain his composure, and this is a guy I think that had to take a year off from the tour either last year or 2 years ago to deal with his family situation. Him and his wife, I think, got divorced, and he ended up with custody of his kids and had to deal with that situation and then come back from that to play at that level on this type of – against that competition on that stage I thought was unbelievable. And obviously going against Sergio, being able to take him to extra holes, I think is a great story. But I'm going to agree with you. He's probably third on that list. I'm going to go Compton second just because of everything he had to go through to perform. And without getting into the golf cart thing, because I do agree with you on that in terms of walking being an integral part of this, the fact that he's able to be upright and swinging a club with a second artificial heart so soon after that transplant, mentally, I can't even imagine what he's going through. So maybe in a weird way, he was relaxed and just said, "Hey, I've been through so much. Golf is nothing." And that was able to help him play to the level that he could. Still a great story in terms of being an underdog and being able to compete and make a cut at Disney is a great story. But Rocco is, I think, hands down the best underdog. This rivals like Bob May of 2000, coming out of nowhere really to compete against Tiger at the PGA Championship in Valhalla. And Rocco, with the back issues and as you mentioned, 45 years old, I'm there right now, and I understand to some extent the nerve issues and what you're going through in terms of, hey, I'm playing against the greatest player of all time. Regardless of the fact that he was playing on a broken leg at the time, still the greatest player. And to be able to summon that effort, I remember watching Mark Rolfing or somebody interviewing him after, I think it was the third round. And they're, Rocco jokes around a lot. There's a lot of, trying to keep it light and those types of things. And Rolfing asked him somewhat jokingly, he's like, "Can Rocco mediate, win this event?" And Rocco, for the first time I think I've ever seen him, got... He was initially like trying to joke around, and then he got like serious for just a brief second. He's like, "Hell yeah, Rocco Media can win this," and sort of cut the interview off. I'm like, you know what? He might win this thing. That's the first time I sort of saw something out of Rocco that was like, you know what? They're kind of treating me like I'm the clown here. Like, this is just all hits and giggles, so to speak. And when Rolfing asked him that, and I think Rolfing was asked him kind of jokingly, and Rocco's, it sort of hit him like, you know, I'm not here just to, you know, come in second and have a good time. And maybe that actually, and I have no idea because Rocco didn't mention any of that in any subsequent interviews, but that was the first time I ever sort of saw something out of Rocco that said, you know what, I'm here to play. I my back issues are fine. I might be 45 and can't hit it within, you know, 200 yards of Tiger's drives, but I'm going to play. So I'm going to give it to Rocco, too, and I know that's probably the easy, you know, safest pick for underdog, but nonetheless, I mean, a guy 45 years old with back issues shouldn't be taking the best player in the world, broken leg or not, to 19 holes in the U.S. Open. So that's going to be
meanwhile
my pick.
With the guys we just discussed, they didn't even win Comeback Player of the Year. I mean, I think
Dudley Hart won it.
Yeah, local guy. Although, frankly, I'm not sure why he won it. It wasn't on my radar screen long enough to really understand what he accomplished to win it. But, yeah.
The funny thing about that was Steve Stricker won it 2 years in a row before Dudley Hart. How do you win Comeback Player of the Year again after you just won it the year before? That's what I don't get. Not to take anything away from Steve Stricker, but something's a little screwy in the balloting if you can win Comeback Player of the Year after you just won Comeback Player of the Year. You're not surprising anybody if you won Comeback Player of the Year the next year, I don't think. So, I don't know. All right, Peter, another award-winning edition of the PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Ropes, Rope segment. Challenge yourself on a golf course that has hosted the Ryder Cup, the PGA Championship, and now the Honda Classic. Come and play at PGA National Resort and Spa. Visit PGAResort.com.